Steinfeld. I'm here with some of my favorite guests. They are theologians. They're spiritually aware people with organizations around the world delivering higher levels of knowledge. But what I'm talking about today is this whole idea of disclosure and what that has to do with religion, other beings. On May 31st, there was a big article in the New York Times talking about ministers in the South that got together to talk about how they're going to present the alien question to their congregation. And there's lots of controversy, it's kind of a surprise. And they need to fit it in somehow. So some Christians see a vexing question and the demons related to extraterrestrial presence. I don't think they're demons. I think they are people are trying to fit them into a category they know, but this is something we don't know. I also have to say before I ask Doctors JJ and Desiree Hertog that religion has been based on higher beings coming basically from the skies and giving people revelation. So first, I think UFOs are different because we don't look up to them as gods, but it's related to the whole history of religion. So Dr. JJ Hertog, you're a theologian. How can we look at this new phenomena with a new lens?
Thank you, Ellen. Well, Desiree and I have given papers at the Parliament of World Religions over the last few decades. My background as a linguist and researcher into ancient Coptic Christian documents in the Middle East, I can say that the Pantheon with the Romans and the Greek philosophers illustrate that actual statuary was set aside for the so-called star nations or visitor.
Well, I have to say, Al, one of the things I always say to those who are asking about extraterrestrials, like the people behind the New York Times, is the fact that extraterrestrials are pretty much like us. Now, some of us are really enlightened. I mean, you had Christ, you had Buddha, you had Moses, you had all those who were tied in, if I say, or aligned with the divine. But then you have others, the majority are still waffling, figuring out what to do with their lives. And then there's like that 10%, and I think that's also true for the extraterrestrials, that are not positive.
Not very nice.
Not very nice. And no. They usually, you know, people identify them. Eric Davis recently came in with the fact of four categories, which we always have agreed with, and we've talked about as well, the reptilians, the insectoids, the grays, and the Nordics, which are the ones that look like us.
However, Eric Davis is a physicist, not a theologian. So if we look back at the history of religion, and I studied with Merce Eliade at the University of Chicago, you see that all religions do speak of what you will call the demigods. So it's a much bigger picture than that which is posed by recent news articles. In fact, well over two decades ago, Paul Davies, a noted physicist, said that much of organized religion would collapse in the context of extraterrestrial visitation.
Well, the problem I have with all this is that people are trying to put this new phenomenon, these new beings, in an old box. I don't think they're demons. I mean, I think probably those things exist, or angels, as my good friend Chris Bledsoe thinks. There's something else happening. So how do we talk to religious leaders and tell them not to go into fear, but to embrace the unknown with amazing new possibilities?
Well, first and foremost, again, if people see extraterrestrials as being on the same level as we, then you realize God, the angels, even the demons in some cases perhaps, are beyond that. That we all in this, what we'll call an experimental realm for soul evolution, are all using the same consciousness field. So that means we have access to positive realities, to divine realities. We also have access to negative thoughts and negative thinking. So we have to realize this is a particular reality that the extraterrestrials are also living in. As the Kabbalists say, there are seven different heavens. And so we're only talking about one or two on the lower rung at this point.
Well, the problem I have with all this is that people are trying to fit a new phenomena into old boxes. And I'll quote another religious scholar, Jeffrey Kripal, who says, you can't make sense of the unknown by putting it into the known. There's something else happening that probably isn't angels or demons. It's a higher form, and they may be like us, and they may not be like us.
Well, I think they're like us in consciousness. They're not like us in genetics and form. Some
but
are.
They may not even be like us in consciousness, right? How could they control the craft with their minds? How
can
they?
Well, we can do that, Alan. That's what you teach. You teach remote viewing. You taught people, you know, and we have many friends that do telekinesis. So it's only that we've been dumbed down. We have those abilities, and I think that that's what's really unique. Is yeah, it's not like us just on this planet walking around wondering if you know I want to fly on an airplane or I'm too afraid of that. It's like us in terms of our greater potential.
And if you look back at the records of history and the movements of thought, you will see that Western civilization in the last 400 years has lived in a type of scientific bubble, thinking we're the only ones in the universe. If you look at the historic records from China, from India, from the Middle Eastern cultures, even from Greece and the Latin world, you will see that there was specifics that were indicated by the great philosophers.
First and foremost, I think the big question is Jesus a extraterrestrial?
Yes, he is. No, you don't think so.
Does he ride a flying saucer?
Absolutely not. Thanks, Alan. But actually, that's the big question. I mean, do we place Jesus, who came in to physically incarnate on this planet?
Well, he wasn't like a regular human.
No, he came in from a higher reality, came into this planet, and then taught us, and left this planet. And when he left it, actually, Dr. Hertak and I are very well known for our work with the Cloth of Turin. We've been on
Shroud
Coast to
Turin,
Coast, the
yes.
Shroud. And basically, it showed how you can go from the physical body back to the light body. So he came from a light body. When we talk about extraterrestrials,
right,
for the most part, we could be talking about beings that are in third or fourth dimensions, that fourth being time, or even fifth dimensions, because they can go through walls. But they're not light beings. That's a whole nother
level. You call that ultra-terrestrials, right?
Absolutely.
The light beings. So there's many levels of consciousness of life in the universe. So,
and the reference that Desiree has just made to the Cloth of Turin was connected with research at Jet Propulsion Lab, a branch of Caltech in Los Angeles. And I had the opportunity to work with Dr. Don Lynn, L-Y-N-N, who did the image enhancement analysis of the cloth and was convinced that a process of sublimation did take place between the Christ figure and what appears on the details of the blood, a light manifestation of intensity. So we're looking now at new scientific tools and methods that we can look at ancient reals, ancient stories of contact, as well as modern stories of contact, with a better sense of logic.
But Alan, why do you think they're different? I mean, what's the difference
that
you see?
Because I think their conscious awareness is different. They can get into people's dreams, which they do. They can manipulate thought. We can probably do that, but we have yet to develop that awareness.
There are many different types, but let's go for the four categories. The Nordics are very similar to us. Now, some of them have elongated skulls, which means probably they've developed that better than we have, but that doesn't mean we don't have that ability. And then there's the Greys, which even Whitley Strieber says are mainly containers. Now, what's interesting about that is people have written books about the fact that some of the Greys even want our soul. Because our soul, of course, in terms of the Bible, you go back to the Bible, we came from a higher reality, we fell into this dimension, and God gave us garments of skin.
I agree with all that, but let's get back to the main point of this show is how do we integrate the ET presence and phenomena, maybe into religion, or maybe religion is out of date at this point?
Absolutely not in terms of the Bible or the original text. In fact, I like the fact that Steven Spielberg in his film Disclosure Day has a nun sitting there, and she specifically says, why would he make, talking about God, such a vast universe and save it only for us? That's exactly what we're talking about.
I agree with that. So how do you integrate this new phenomena for most of the people into their religious beliefs?
In actuality, the Bible confirms exactly what we're talking about. And this is why the Catholics are well aware, especially those in higher up in the Vatican, and even those connected with the Vatican Observatory, are very well aware that this is true, that extraterrestrials exist, and it does not fly in the face of the book of Genesis.
Well, Religions are based on belief.
Well, that's a different story in terms of culture and everything like that.
Well, yeah, this right. I'll go along with a little bit of what you said, too, because there is obviously an all-wise knowing intelligence that all of us are a part of. You can call that God, you can call it whatever, and we are a fractal unit, just like the ETs are a fractal of all that is.
And, you know, we've had in situations that we've heard about where a girl was taken up with her son and a tractor in the area of New Mexico, and when she said, "Oh, Jesus Christ," they said, "You can't use that word," and they put her back. Now, this is not the only occurrence, because Representative Ana Paulina Luna has said, even in the hearing that she did with Lou Elizondo, and you were there at that hearing,
there.
Where she says, how come when some of the UFOs appear and the person is religious, they quickly disappear? So it's not all of them, and I think that's the fastest.
I'll tell you my theory about that. Okay. They quickly disappear because some people's beliefs are so strong they cannot be manipulated by these extraterrestrial
presence. But isn't that a positive thing?
Yeah, it's a positive thing, yeah. But it's not the fact of religion. It's that their belief has made them separate, in a
sense.
Well,
our work, which is 50 years plus,
yes,
as linguists, has to re-examine the ancient biblical text and non-biblical text. And if you read the text very carefully, certain divine pronouncements or sacred words or expressions were used to engage individuals who we would call believers with the angelic world and disconnect with the demigods or the fallen hierarchy in the Hebrew called the Nephilim.
Right.
So we have discovered in our work throughout the world with people of all religious backgrounds, but primarily the Judeo-Christian, that the names of God presented in the Holy Scriptures do help us discern as well as protect us from the vibratory presence of life forms we don't understand.
But the big question I'm trying to ask you both, and we're getting to it, is that what would you say to religious leaders to tell their congregation about ETs? How would you present
Well, the first thing I say, and that's why I don't think that they're going to enlighten us. You're kind of indicating some will enlighten us. Yeah, Buddha enlightened us. Christ enlightened us. Moses enlightened us. You know, wherever you want to go around the world, there has always been those who enlightened us. So, yes, there are beings that can enlighten us.
Right.
But the majority of extraterrestrials are not the ones to enlighten us. They are on the same wavelength, literally, as we are. In fact, the reptilians are literally against us. In fact, some people, and I kind of side with that a little bit, maybe we wiped them out on this planet and they want to get back. Well, and we took it over.
So how would you talk to people just waking up overnight, seeing the headline, yes, extraterrestrials exist. How does that fit in with their concept of God and reality?
Well, it fits in the fact that you're introducing them to other local intelligences that have, just like us, the good guys, the bad guys, and the indifferent guys. If they're not on the level of the divine.
So you're saying it doesn't have to do with their faith, it just has to do with an expanded notion of reality.
Right, and this is the cosmology of the Keys of Enoch, and that's why I'm so excited that this is coming out, because we've been talking about it for 50 years.
Well, how do you fit into your cosmology, the extraterrestrials?
Right, well, specifically, Alan, we defined in the Keys of Enoch the difference between UFOs, we'll say flying saucers, and Merkaba vehicles. The Merkaba vehicles are those that can take us to other dimensional realities. That's what Ezekiel saw.
Well, don't we have that around our body all the time, the Merkaba?
Theoretically, we do, but there are those that can then augment that energy around you and take you to those divine levels.
The vehicle of light. So, like some ET races don't seem to actually use craft. They just have their
We have vehicle. Illustrated this in the actual computer film of the Merkaba Voyage of the Starseed film, because we received several international awards, and in this film you're taking through the journey of seeing the vastness of the universe, but at the same time you understand the swimming in hyperspace of how we have to learn to discern these levels of intelligence, as we are now being told by the Disclosure Project in the United States, and say, no big thing, there are other life systems. We have to pass beyond that by having a more positive psychology and theology, which in effect is in the teachings of the Etz Chaim, the book, or the Tree of Life, as well as in the concept of Christ teaching the house of many mansions. In the New Testament, namely, there's a plurality of worlds that we have to educate ourselves
about. Deseret.
Right. So specifically, the plurality of worlds, according to the Keys of Enoch cosmology, is that beyond this universe, there are other universes. It is those universes we call the Father universe, the Shekinah universe, that's the divine presence, kind of a creative power, that manifested other worlds. This is one of those other worlds. It's an experimental realm, and the thought forms are the same throughout. It's a dualistic system, and every moment is a moment of choice. And that's true for us, for reptilians, for those who are insectoids, for the greys, and for the Nordics. Well, so this is really where the Keys of Enoch and our cosmology differs from a lot of the extraterrestrial investigators, and that is they feel that the Nephilim had created our DNA. Now, one of the things, if you go back to the original Book of Enoch, which Representative Luna from the congressional area of Florida has acknowledged, is that they did come in and try to have relations with the daughters of men.
Well, that's in the Bible.
No, it's in the Bible, Genesis chapter 6, but it's also completely written in the Book of Enoch, the ancient Book of Enoch, which you can find online in a PDF. But they created giants. It got so bad on this planet that the higher angelic forces, this is how the cosmology really unfolds,
right,
had to come down, give us the flood. What did the flood do? Wiped out the giants and got us back to our original genetic code. Why is our genetic code important? Why would the suns even come down here? Because we have that higher light code structure. We were light beings, as it says in Genesis 1 and 2, before we fell into this reality.
Well, I like the idea of the higher light codes, because it has to do with the other thing you just mentioned, consciousness. So consciousness, which is kind of universal, it's not localized, it's infinite, is encoded into the physical body through light code technologies, and that's what's brought out in the Keys of Enoch, right, David?
Right, and in the historic Book of Enoch, we have that dialectic between the giants of the earth, mm-hmm, and the giants of space, called the Archangel Michael, Gabriel, Uriel, etc., who intervene. Well, most look at this as a mythological story that has no consequence, but history repeats itself, and we have now evidence. I've seen this also in some of my work behind the scenes with the governments of Mexico and Brazil, actual pictures of the grotesque beings, so you can't blame the average person for saying these are fallen, shall we say, experimenters, or probes. Our mutual friend Bud Hopkins would say these are the uninvited intruders who come in and suddenly present a different formula for education through genetics and manipulation of genetics. So we have this tremendous challenge now before us to, we see, raise up human consciousness very quickly to understand we have friends and foe in the universe.
Let's just get back to this idea of consciousness. We are conscious beings. These others, these ETs, are obviously conscious beings. So this is a place of meeting and taking us all to the next level. Actually, maybe you're right. They do need something from us, but they have things, technologies, and understanding of history, biology, that we could definitely use.
Alan, your use of the word consciousness is supreme here, because consciousness, as we understand it through our work with Elizabeth Rauscher and Key, physicists, is the ability and capacity to do it with all levels of universal intelligence.
Yeah, we have that ability, but when I say they need something from us, it's actually not only enjoying our soul capacity, but even our genetic capacity, because we haven't been cloned. And some of these species, it seems like when you follow the work of Dan Bursch, says that they've been cloning themselves, that they actually have bad neuropathy because their genetic makeup is going downhill.
That's why they need our genetic makeup.
Even cattle mutilation seems to be all the elements. Like, we eat cows. Why do we eat cows? For nutrition. They want cows, too. They need that nutrition. They need those elements that they have, the enzymes and the other ADPs.
Well, so let me say that Dan Burrish was a microbiologist, worked in Area 51, who we had an opportunity to know.
Yeah, I want to meet him.
He checked my information on biogenetics and agreed with is postulated in the Keys of Enoch that we are one of many experiments connected with divine source, or God code from upstairs rather than experimental ET code from downstairs.
Right. Okay.
Well, what's interesting, we're not only one humanity. I think we will discover we are the Adamic species. And what I think is very, very unusual in terms of the extraterrestrial is that you will find us qualified now as the Nordics, in outer space. That means that we did not evolve exclusively on this planet. Our DNA is there in the Pleiades, it's there in Sirius, it's there in other star systems like Arcturus, which the Keys of Enoch talk about. So basically, we're rediscovering our cosmic family.
Right, this is what Gary Nolan says. He says DNA is far older than the Earth. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old, and the DNA, the molecule of life, is 9 billion years old. So we were seeded, I agree with you, from other star systems, from a panspermia creation.
And actuality, of course, Dr. Ortega takes it one step further in the Keys of Enoch, that we have the codes of the divine within us. He wrote about this in 1973. It's now becoming more and more popular by other writers. But we basically have these higher codes, which help us to have a higher soul, which takes us into this multidimensional aspect that those of the congressional hearings are talking about.
So if we have humility, but also keep an open mind, we will understand that our genetic capacity is part of the divine creation story that continues.
And we realize that people are not going to agree with our cosmology. It is the cosmology of Dr. Hertag's unique experience from 1973.
Well, let's go through your cosmology.
But that does show consciousness. But let us discuss also, more importantly, that the understanding that extraterrestrials clearly exist just gives another layer to the house of many mansions that even Christ talked about. There are many, many realms, many beings, many different forms of intelligence, many layers. The Kabbalists, the seven heavens.
Right.
Also, we heard that's true for those of the Quran. They also acknowledge.
And so, to answer Ellen's question, our cosmology is really based upon a multidimensional universe, and we are one part of this multidimensional training of our soul capacity to ultimately join the other cultures in a type of sovereign creation story that continues.
But there's many layers. There's the extraterrestrial layers, but there's also those like Melchizedek talked about in the Bible. He was motherless and fatherless, according to Christian traditions, and in some cases Jewish tradition, and he materialized here and stayed here for a while. He did not use a UFO, although we'll say in some cases, in the Sumerian tradition, there were UFOs that were seen, or strange beings that had like fish-like forms and other types of forms. We are one form of the vastness of the universe, and we are learning and growing and starting to graduate into this house of many mansions.
Let's talk about the interdimensionalness, like Representative Anna Paulina Luna is often mentioning in her interviews. She happens to be a very religious person. I think she's Greek Orthodox.
And she uses the historic Ethiopic Book of Enoch as one of her inspirational sources.
How do you fit interdimensionality into a religious context?
Well, there's various aspects of interdimensionality. And I think even the concept of dimensions, we'll talk about the 8th dimension, the 12th dimension, but I don't think we're really defining it properly. But let's just go with that. For now, because that's our semantics. Actually, what you'll find is that we ourselves, when we travel at night sometimes, can go interdimensionally. When we also have the gift of remote viewing, which you teach, Alex, you can go into the future, or you can go into the past.
So we are interdimensional.
We are interdimensional. We just don't connect to it. So I'm excited about extraterrestrials coming into our midst, because I agree with you, Alan. Okay. It's going to awaken us, because we're going to know who we are in a greater level. In fact, I love the message we did with you on Moment of Contact with James Fox.
Right.
And at the end, the alien intelligence was communicating to one of the doctors taking care of this alien intelligence that landed in Brazil in Varginha. And what he said is, it's so sad. You don't know who you really are.
You humans do not know who you really
are. Exactly, and we don't. And I don't, in my personal opinion, religion is helping us know who we are. But let's break it down. What would be the first step? So we've been around this subject for maybe 20 years. We've seen craft. There's people waking up. They're living in a little bubble. How would you? What would be the step one for introducing this?
Wake up, grow up, clean up, and stand up. But to use the semantics of understanding that the preoccupation with materialistic society, reductionistic materialism, has, should we say, kept us in the closet.
But I feel, and I would argue, that people already have had that ability, not every single person on this planet. We can connect and activate our higher selves at any time. We have just been a little bit dumbed down, and hopefully extraterrestrials, I'll go along with part of what you said, that extraterrestrials will help us to awaken our higher identity, but it's not that the ETs are going to do it for us. It's going to awaken us to the point that we can do it for ourselves.
Right. I'll go along with a little bit of what you said, too, because there is obviously an all-wise knowing intelligence that all of us are a part of.
Steven Spielberg also does that on his Day of Disclosure, because he himself, in an interview with CBS, says, is God our God only on this planet, or is God a God of every system where there is civilization, intelligent life, and even developing life?
What's the answer
life?
To that?
Yes. No, you don't limit God
to us.
That's ridiculous.
I believe that too.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, heaven, hell, and the underworld, everything's focused on us. No, there's a reason why we are not able to evolve, because there's a vast reality that we are part of that is part of our soul growth. I agree with that. But part of this dualistic system that we manifested into or chose to be. And Dr. Jack actually witnessed that there is a greater Godhead. And that Godhead is not local to our system of things. That's the thing that you've been raised with, that there's God, there's us, and there's hell.
I know.
And that's it. But that isn't in the Bible. It's actually not. It's only in the cosmology.
If you look at
religions.
The original Hebrew Bible,
there
are seven heavens. Mm. You look at the New Testament in the correspondence of the Apostle Paul. He was taken to the third heaven. So whether you want to use the Old or New Testament, there was a recognition by the ancient thinkers that there was multiple worlds. We were isolated because of experiments of incarnation.
And our own choice to be here. So just to add to what we're saying, we can see the extraterrestrials as being very similar in a consciousness level to us. And I say that not because we're dumbed down, but because we actually came from light energy. If you read Genesis 1 and 2, before the fall, we were light garments. We had to take on bodies of skin to come here. This is why we also have that same capacity as the higher levels of extraterrestrial intelligence. And those others also are looking at us to say, hey, you have a very high soul capacity. Mm-hmm. Join us when we become more peaceful. We'll see why they're coming now. Why is
so we need a new anthropology cosmology, that the game doesn't stop with Mother Earth, that the soul goes on. In studies that I've been connected with, through Russell Targ and others at Stanford Research Institute in Northern California, show that consciousness does go into the future, or that opens the door, the perceptual doors, to the multidimensional realm that we must ultimately move into. Why? Because evolution doesn't stop with Mother Earth.
I do believe in the infinity capacity of the soul, and maybe these other beings don't have the same capacity, or maybe they're trying to learn from us because we are very feeling, emotional, loving beings, at least most of us, and we are trying to evolve that. So yes, it is a graduation time. We're going to meet these beings. They're going to help expand the possibilities of who we are, and I think bring more technology, biology, understanding to this world, so we're in a very exciting moment.
Absolutely. And
let's break it down. Step one, how would you tell people who've never heard of extraterrestrials that's here, and it doesn't have to interfere with their faith? What would you say?
First of all, be humble, but also be alert and discerning those forms that respect our human psyche, our human heart, our way of life, as opposed to those who would take advantage and use us for experimentation, take our precious bodily fluids and create other life forms. Sure. Secondly, recognize that we have a plethora of documents all throughout history that point to the fact that there are more positive than negative forms in the higher realms of creation, and that part of our soul growth is becoming aware of how we develop practical insights to go with the light, to go with the positive, ultimately reaching cosmic citizenship.
So if we go back also to Whitley Strieber, who says that the alien seen on the cover of Communion actually creates grays, and this is what he says, the alien intelligence doesn't travel, and that's true for some of the higher forces either. They don't travel, but they project into different realities. So that alien has created grays bodies that she, I believe it's a she, right, can project into and then go anywhere in the universe because the gray intelligence can travel and she can experience. That's just telling you that we have that higher soul capacity like that alien. That's what I would argue, and that's what others have argued. Our soul actually is quite dynamic, and many of the grays even want our soul.
There might be a modification in some of the doctrines of some religions that have to change their perspective about converting the universe to their
way. This is why we emphasize the language of the Holy Spirit, because we are told ultimately, if you read the Psalms or the New Testaments, that there will be a time when the Holy Spirit will be poured out. We see this in the Old Testament prophet Joel chapter 2. In the New Testament book of Acts of the Apostles chapter 2, the Holy Spirit is predicted to pour out upon old and young people alike a spirit of prophecy, of understanding the greater wisdom, the greater glory of God, which should include also the angelic realms, the hierarchies, not simply the extraterrestrials, but the extra-celestials, the ultra-terrestrials, and even those of the Lords of Light. So a living consciousness cosmology through music, through linguistics, through the re-examination of the historic biblical documents, as well as books left out of the Bible, like the Book of Enoch, I feel would be a starting point to realize the experience of the soul. So why we're here to learn of the greater story that we must now face.
And we're not naive to say it's not going to shock, and that's why you go back to the New York Times article, that they were warning the pastors that there is going to be this release, and we believe we're only at the beginning of it.
Yes.
In fact, David Grush recently said in the next 60 to 90 days there's going to be more and more of this. But ultimately, of course they have to change the idea that we're alone in the universe. Of course they have to change their concept that it's only us. But the Bible itself, where they really take their wisdom from, or the Upanishads, or the Vedic teachings, or the Buddhist teachings,
or the Quran,
Quran for that matter, all can accept and even have inklings.
They can accept it.
Yes, and even have inklings to this reality. But let's go on now to the Buddhist and the Hindu.
Okay.
They have always talked about myriad of levels of intelligence. And when you see the pictures, like the Tonkas, you usually don't see one person and a few people on Earth. You see myriads of beings in the heavens. So they already have the cosmology. Whether it's the Vimanas of the vehicles or whether it's Buddha on cloud 9, there's different aspects that accept and understand that we are certainly not the only ones in the universe. Right,
but as we kind of conclude here, I mean, we're in this liminal space where people are just waking up to the fact that there's something here. So how does this impact the whole future of the planet? I want to know from you, Dr.
The bottom line, we must understand we're multidimensional beings in the vast and awesome universe, and we must smell the coffee. There's no time to go into different directions without going into the heart, into self-realization, realizing we are a microcosm of the divine in human form. The spirit of the divine works within us in elevation of knowledge to a much higher level than the materialistic cultures of the West and the East. And we have now an opportunity not to worship the extraterrestrials as God, but to go beyond what they represent in fuller knowledge that we are potential cosmic citizens in what Jesus Christ called the house of many mansions.
But the real question, I think, is why is this coming
now? Yes, that's a good question.
So I think there's two possibilities. One, of course, has been a long cover-up. Two, I do think that we may be on the verge of using nuclear weapons, which most of the good extraterrestrials have been very anti-against.
Right.
So maybe they have to, like, really make themselves known so we stop that. And the other aspect, there may be things with the environment that's going to be, you know, destroying the planet, that they can help us and they want to step in. I don't know. I think ultimately, once they do make themselves more and more known, and we don't know which ones may come first,
right,
the ones that are really positive trying to help or the ones that are abducting people, because not for us. I got news for you. This is the strange thing.
What?
The abduction phenomenon.
Yeah.
Years ago in the 50s, people used to say, oh, they wanted to preserve our seed because we're stuck on this planet and they want to go on.
Okay.
More and more, what are they finding out?
What?
They need us. We don't need them.
Well,
that's
I think
the title of the book.
I think it's a mutual exchange. What I want to conclude here is that this phenomena, as it comes to planet Earth and more people know about it, I think Spielberg makes this point in his movie, the overall, I think, essence of this phenomena and its relationship to human rights is that we are one humanity. And I think that's really key.
Well, I think more than one humanity, this is what I was going to really conclude with, is the concept that with our contact with extraterrestrial species, hopefully we'll get away from the war games, as even Ronald Reagan said, once we see ourselves, as one humanity, we can then go into the stars, because I think it's really our invitation into the cosmos, and we should not go out as warlike creatures, but as peaceful, loving beings. That's the most important thing that we can offer and we can do. Plus, we have the higher capacity. Where are we going? Well, we can go to many levels of reality.
May the divine name protect us. May the divine name, Yod-Heh Vod-Heh, prepare us. And may the divine name, also as the cosmic Christ, quicken us that we are prepared for all realities, knowing that our soul is from the eternal source, not from the extraterrestrial source.
Well, the best part of all this is me understanding that divinity lives within, that we're a fractal of a greater intelligence like these ETs, and we can meet them on an even playing field without worship and learn about their technology. They can learn about us. I think we're at the bridge, at the threshold of a great renaissance for humanity, art, culture, technology, biology. It is at our doorstep. So don't go into fear. Don't retreat into what you know. Welcome the unknown.
And that's why we're talking to you, Alan. That's why we're talking to all of you in the audience.
Right.
You are potentially cosmic citizens of the future. Mm-hmm. Let us make the quest for a positive future by understanding the spiritual heritage of the higher traditions in love, light, and wisdom.
Right, but I just want to say, because we're at that time of graduation, it seems that's why we're meeting the others now. You know, you graduate, high school, you go to a bigger grade, you meet other beings. That's where we're at this time in our evolution, about to meet the others, because if we could find the coherence within our civilization, we can meet them on an even playing field. What Bruce Lipton says, when humanity is unified in a coherence as a single voice, we will meet the other single voices and create the next super organism. So I'm really excited about where we are. And whatever your belief system is, start to expand it. We're in for some very exciting times. We're in for some new realities, which I foresaw that would come when I named this program that in 1993. So the new realities are here. It's time to wake us all up. It's time to shift our belief system to higher possibilities and know who we really are as divine human beings.
And the ancient Greeks called that ad astra, to the stars.
Thank you.
New realities is to open your mind, your perceptual apparatus to the stars. And there the next chapter of life continues. So positive, a gracious, and inner dynamic is before us. Let us choose the higher path.
Thank you all for watching New Realities with my very special guests, Drs. JJ and Desiree Hertok. Welcome back to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld here with some of my favorite people, great guests, the Hertoks, Drs. JJ and Desiree Hertok, and my new best friend, Rizwan Burke, who is the author of The Simulated Multiverse and The Simulation Hypothesis, now in its second edition. So we're going to do like a cross-cultural study from different spiritual traditions, including the digital framework, and see how the simulated universe really hooks up into the ancient spiritual traditions. Is that fair, Rizwan?
Yeah.
So what you're saying basically is that the digital landscape, the computer tech world, it's really very much aligned with the ancient spiritual traditions. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm saying that it's getting to be more aligned over time. And I was in the video game industry and sold my last company. And I tell the story where I put on a virtual reality headset and I started to play this VR ping pong game. And what happened was that the responsiveness was so good that it convinced my body for a second that I was playing a real game of ping pong. So much so that I tried to put the paddle on the table and I tried to lean against the table, but of course there was no table. Yeah. And so I began to wonder how long would it take us to build a digital world that was so realistic, like the Matrix, mm-hmm. that you would forget that there's a part of you outside of that game?
Well, that's similar to Dr. Herzog's experience when he left this dimensional world. He went to another and saw how the artificial structure of this was really a simulation. Is that true, Dr. Herzog?
Yes. So we're speaking now the paraphysical possibilities that under certain unique conditions, part of the human psyche can transit the three-dimensional realm and experience others. By background, I studied with Mircea Eliade, the famous Sanskrit scholar at the University of Chicago, and my PhD thesis was on the language of secrecy, where I looked at the symbolic logic of the ancient Gnostic, Kabbalistic, and Buddhist schools of thought. Mm-hmm. These are traditionally very large traditions of intellectual philosophy, but the bottom line or baseline was that all of these major schools believe that our ordinary reality is artificial mm-hmm. and that we are guided by what we call higher dynamic principles.
But I think we can take it one step further to make it more realistic, actually, in the sense that it's almost like a super string theory, that the idea that we're vibrating in one frequency here and there's other frequencies as well. In a sense, and I would put this now at the bottom, the third dimensional reality is only one aspect of a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth dimensional reality. And the real question is, how do they fit together? So I like your work because it doesn't say that we're just a bunch of puppets and there's some, you know, big, you know, game show happening in the universe. And occasionally, if they don't like what we're doing, they'll turn us off or they'll slip us in another timeline. You're actually saying that we're connected.
I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, I think my perspective on the simulation hypothesis is a little different than many people in Silicon Valley, where they do think of everyone as AI. Mm-hmm. And I think of the physical reality as more like a massively multiplayer video game. Right. And in that world, you have a player that exists outside of the game, and you have a character, which is called an avatar, which of course is a Sanskrit term.
Right.
That means that when a divine entity squeezes itself into a human body. Mm-hmm. And so by taking that approach, you can start to link what many of the world's spiritual traditions have been telling us, that the world isn't real in the sense that we think it is, that it's a type of an illusion or it's a type of Maya.
And that's not a new thing, though. I mean,
yeah, it's not a new thing. So I think what's happened is that because in each of these traditions, someone might peek outside of the physical world. And then when they come back, they have to describe it in a way that would make sense to the residents mm-hmm. of the world at that time, which was generally a few thousand years ago.
Right.
So you get Plato's cave.
Exactly.
You get Buddha's dream. You get Shakespeare's stage play. And then when Swami Yogananda came over to the U.S. 100 years ago, he started to use a different metaphor. He started to use a technological metaphor.
Right, the film projector.
The film projector. He said this was the latest technology. Let me explain to you the concepts of Maya and karma. And when the actors, you know, they don't die. The characters suffer, but the actors don't. And so I believe if you were alive today, you'd say we need to update that metaphor.
So historically, it was the wisdom schools that had this possibility of mental projection into another dimension, looking back at the human experiences, a quasi-illusionary experience. Whereas your great work, Simulation Hypothesis, in your newest book, illustrates how this has come into common vogue. We all are working with the possibility that we're entertaining parallel realities at all times.
Right. But the thing I think that connects the whole, both your tradition, Desiree, JJ, and yours, is that when we know the rules of the game, when we know that it's the illusion, we somehow can avoid some of the dramas or the intensity,
well,
right?
Well, if I can just say, I mean, you say illusion, and I understand that that's what the Sanskrit has said as well. But isn't it, in a sense, I often see this reality as a way of playing out certain things that we're, as a soul, trying to evolve. So I think, you know, the idea of illusion means it's not really that, you know, necessary to have everything here, that it's not all here. The illusion is that it's all here, that it's only here.
Right.
The anti-illusion is that we're connected to even what we consider our higher self, and we even chose to come here and to play these games. I mean, we're playing a game here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And so I say when I talk about simulation theory, there's five assertions.
Oh, tell
us. And they tie to exactly what you're talking about. The first assertion is that the world consists of information. So this table is just bits of information. Mm-hmm. The second is that information gets computed over time. Mm-hmm. And you can see fractal algorithms in nature. Mm-hmm. You can see, you know, DNA as an information source and processing. The third is that that gets rendered for us to look as if it's real.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that if we were all in a video game together, it might appear that we're standing in a real field with a castle or a dragon,
right.
But we're really not. It's being rendered in a way that makes it look that way. Now, assertions four and five are interesting because what four says, it's all a kind of hoax,
mm-hmm.
that the whole thing is a kind of hoax. And then the fifth assertion says, we agreed to participate in this hoax.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a video game, and in a game like Dungeons and Dragons,
mm-hmm.
role-playing game, you choose your character. You know, you choose whether you're going to be an elf, a dwarf, a human. You choose your storyline. Are you going to be a warrior, a thief, a cleric, a bard? And then you choose some of the challenges that you're going to have in that game.
Right.
And those are the quests that appear to you. So if we think of this as that type of a game, then in fact we have chosen our characters to deal with certain issues, which gets, I think, to what Desiree is saying about we're here to learn and evolve. And the more difficult quests, the people who are having more difficulties may actually be the more advanced players, right?
Yeah, the challenges. Let's have challenges. I still would like to go back, if we can, for a moment,
sure.
to the idea of, you wrote a book called The Simulated Multiverse, and we've talked about many universes for a long time.
In fact, we wrote a paper on the multiverse with Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher.
But the idea in my mind is that every universe, and you can correct me in your own philosophy, may have its own kind of, we'll say,
rules
and ideas. And like, we live in a duality system here, and it's forcing us to choose, do I choose this thing or do I choose? Every moment is a moment of choice. Actually, we have a book that we're part of on that title. But another universe, right, would have something else. I can't imagine, because we don't have the mind to imagine what another universe would be. We only have the mind for this universe.
Right.
Do you agree with some of
that? And are you saying that we're avatars on many different games?
Yeah, so what I'm saying in the simulated multiverse is that if you can run a simulation once, you would end up running it more than once.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because you want to try out different variables. You want to see what would happen if you do this versus that. And so in this book, I talk about the different kinds of multiverses. And what you're getting at is that there's a multiverse where you might have different sets of physical laws, but the quantum multiverse is the one that I'm focused on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the quantum multiverse, it's about the choices that you make.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a kind of one of the popular interpretations of the quantum, of the observer effect.
Right.
One interpretation is called the collapse of the probability wave. But you can't have a probability unless you run something more than once. Like,
mm-hmm.
If I just flip a coin once and I say that's the probability,
it's always going to be heads. Right?
Yeah, you only get it once.
There's no probability.
Right? So the probability happens if you run it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And so the multiverse interpretation says that every choice that we make, I'm going to go to college in Boston, I'm going to go to college in California, I'm going to marry this person or that person, ends up branching off a different part of our intended life. Now, I got deep into this because of the work of Philip K. Dick,
right.
a science fiction writer.
Yeah.
So I interviewed his wife when I was writing the first book, and he had a very famous speech in Metz, France in 1977, where he said, "We are living in a computer-programmed reality, and the only clue we have to it is when some variable is changed, some alteration occurs in our reality."
Mm-hmm.
We would have the sense of deja vu,
mm-hmm.
that we were reliving the same events, saying the same things. Such an event is a clue, he said, that in the past a variable was changed and it was run forward. Now, he came to believe that his novel, The Man in the High Castle, which is the basis for a very interesting Amazon streaming series,
right.
where Germany and Japan won World War II,
yeah.
that was a real timeline that actually ran,
mm-hmm.
but now the simulators are running this other timeline because they didn't like where that timeline went.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of the simulated multiverse is perhaps we as individuals, but then also we as a collective,
mm-hmm.
are running the civilization forward to see, will we blow ourselves up?
Well,
your new book, The Multiverse, suggests that we are within ourselves a blueprint of multidimensional thinking reality,
mm-hmm.
that we can grasp by not pinning ourselves down like a butterfly into three-dimensional pinwork, that we have the ability, through the power of the mind, to make a higher quest, a higher understanding, a higher reinterpretation, and thus a new roadmap, where we are confronting the possibilities that AI may assume, really, the human situation of all decision-making. A paper that Desiree and I did with question the choices that we have, the free choices we have that are not completely subsumed under AI.
Well, let's take it another step, because AI is an interesting topic. I mean, we're choosing right now how to deal with another life form. I'm going to say this, and you know, I'm the one woman here. Say it's like we're birthing a new creation. And now how do we deal with that? So it's almost like, okay, we believe we came, and I think the religions also say we came from a higher creation. We came into this manifestation. And so now we're actually doing the same thing. We're playing God in a certain sense with AI and birthing it. Now, what controls, what teachings, what, you know, management do we do? Do we just let the kid run wild? Or do we do something practical with higher
What do we do about that? I mean, how does that help us? There's a big intersection between AI and simulation theory. And there's a new version or flavor of simulation theory. It's called prompt theory. And the idea is when somebody writes a prompt that tells AI to create a fully realistic video of people saying, hey, we're not in a simulation. You know, this isn't zeros and ones. And there's some really viral videos that have gone out there. But today, Google just released Genie 3. Genie, which is a singular form of jinn, has always been one of my topics that I'm quite interested in. It actually ties to the multiverse idea, too. But basically, what Genie lets you do is it lets you describe the universe that you want to create, and it will create an interactive video game type world, and you can start to explore. It's kind of like the holodeck, if you've ever watched Star Trek The Next Generation.
Gene Roddenberry, who came up with the idea.
Great,
multiple levels of reality, and with the power of the mind, we just go to another reality level.
But so how do we work? Let's say this is true, that every decision branches off into multiple universes, and then sometimes I feel I should have went that way instead, and then I come back around and I hook up with
universe. Well, you can actually do exercises, and I've done these at various conferences. I mean, we did short one-minute versions of them where you can hook into an alternate version of yourself. And so you use your imagination initially to get a glimpse of it, but then you start to explore what was the life of that person like. And then if you've ever seen the film Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
I did like that.
She would go into this other universe and bring something back. She would bring back.
And so all this is true, but I mean, here we are in this reality right now. So what?
Let's talk about the Mandela effect. So the Mandela effect, people have probably heard of it, which is when some subset of people remember something happening differently.
Right.
It's funny, there's a Star Trek angle to that where this blogger, Fiona Broom, was at Dragon Con, and the Trekkies remembered an episode, but the Star Trek actors who were on the panel said, we never made that episode. And so she began to explore this thing with Mandela having died in prison. But that's because we assume there's only one possible past. There may be multiple futures, right? I mean, I go this way or I go that way. But we assume there's only one possible past. But quantum mechanics actually is not saying that. They're saying there's something very strange that happens. And Schrodinger, you know, of
The cat
and the equation fame, actually, I found an obscure speech of Schrodinger's from the 1940s, at, I think Caltech, where he said, not only are we collapsing the probability wave, but we are also effectively choosing from one of several simultaneous histories. So if you think of these histories, and maybe some people who have the Mandela effect are actually remembering a different one of those histories. So I think that how we, you know, the choices that we make and what we observe, both in terms of the future and the past and how we collapse things, makes a difference, right? So perhaps there's a part of us sitting outside watching this right now, watching what happens when we do that versus
Would
this.
That prove reverse causality within the quantum factor, like you can influence the past?
It's a type of retropast. Now, the quantum physicists would say you're not actually changing the past. What you're doing is you're choosing the past, right? But that's pretty much the same thing. If you think about it, there's something called the delayed choice experiment.
Can
you describe that?
The cosmic delayed choice experiment is, let's suppose light is coming from a billion light years away to here. So it's going to take it a billion years. And let's suppose in the middle there's a black hole. and the light has to go to the left or to the right of the black hole.
Right.
You can almost think of it like a double slit.
Right, right.
And we have telescopes here that can measure. Whether, and let's suppose it's halfway. So when would the decision have to have been made of whether the light went to the left or to the right?
That influences it, actually.
Half a billion years ago, though.
Right.
So during the time of the dinosaurs, it has to decide whether to go to the left or right.
Mm-hmm.
But what the delayed choice experiment is showing is it's not till we measure it today.
So we as the observer.
Till we collapse that wave function and say, it's this.
And then it was this.
It was this. That's the key point.
That's the key point.
It was that because we measured it to be that.
But see, the thing is, it's delayed choice. We didn't measure it when it did it. We only measured it later, but we were right.
I think there must be some holes.
And you know, one of the most interesting aspects that Stanford Research Institute did studies on psychic ability back in the 70s and 80s, not only the progressive cognitive ability, but the retrogressive, and they showed in their studies that some mental sensitives could actually go back in time momentarily.
Well, that's the real question with this. I mean, I do think that we can influence things in the past. I would agree with the wheel is delayed choice. On the other hand, we are also part of this whole, we could say, simulated reality, and we consider ourselves having a higher knowledge, so we already knew what was going to happen. So that goes back to Alan's work and ours with remote viewing. So it all kind of comes together in quantum physics, I think.
But right now, this moment, here we are in this very solid universe. Are we also in another universe having a slightly different discussion?
Like a fifth or eighth dimension? Or
it's possible. I mean, that's what the multiverse
said,
that we've tried this once or twice.
Right.
Maybe there was a version where, you know, we weren't able to coordinate, right? Mm-hmm. We were talking about coordinating what time we were going to do this one day.
Right.
And that put, it's possible that went down. Now, what I try to describe here is perhaps we're trying out these different things, but we end up on one kind of major timeline that we're all sort of agreeing on, even though we remember, some of us might remember these other times. Now,
so here we are in this reality. How can we make it the best reality we want?
Is it a reality, though?
Well, I feel pretty real myself.
Talks about new realities.
Well, this calls to question the nature of our reality as humans. Are we three-dimensional or multidimensional?
You've said before that oftentimes we may be controlling some of that simulation, not from this reality.
I think the most beneficial part is like the Yogananda thing. We're characters, we have dramas, and we're also outside of this whole drama field.
But I think we also all agree that really there is not a, there's a death to this illusion, if I can say that, but there's not a death to who we are and our soul.
Right, and that can help us as we go through challenges in our lives.
Right.
I mean, this happens. We go through financial challenges, relationship challenges, and especially physical challenges that can be very difficult. But if we think of that as a kind of quest or challenge that part of us outside is watching, that gives us the confidence that, okay, I can get through this challenge. Because in a video game, you don't get the hardest quest right away.
Right.
You start off with quests that you can handle. And it's only as you level up and you learn how to play the game that you get the more difficult quests.
And would you say in your tradition, Desiree, that when you learn to play a certain level, there's a soul expansion, your soul's capacity to feel and have compassion shifts?
Well, absolutely. In our work with comparative linguistics, comparative religion and philosophy, we arrive at the same position that resonates with AI engineering, that there's a baseline, but we're not pinned down to that baseline. That really the higher over self or high self, whatever we wanted to designate, really gives us choices and opportunities that can be recognized and utilized.
Well, we also wrote a book called Over Self Awakening, and we see the reality that we are in this higher reality, what we can call a 12th or 24th dimension, or even another, you know, big game world or whatever, and that we are one of the extensions. The ancients also understood that we could have many bodies. We could actually be here now. We could also be maybe even in the past, who knows, and certainly in the future because time is that illusion. So we choose to be here to accomplish certain things for the universe, and I think that's also important because if we're evolving, if we're changing, if things are needing, I think many people feel we're here now for a reason because all of us with a certain consciousness is able to transform. It's able to do certain things that maybe we couldn't do in the past.
Right. That goes along with your theory. Like beginners will do the beginner's life, like build an ego. You can see the people just starting out, they need to prove themselves, and then others can step back and see a bigger picture, have more compassion for all of humanity, right?
Yeah, I would say that, and I think a key part of this is the idea of forgetfulness. And every spiritual tradition describes some level of forgetfulness when we are incarnated or we're born. I was asked to speak at an Islamic jurisprudence conference. And I said, well, why are you asking me?
Right.
You know, yeah, I grew up as a Muslim, but I'm not particularly religious, and right. I never studied law. And there were scholars from Cairo there. There was an Ayatollah there from Iran, a more liberal one than what we're used to thinking. And they were debating, you know, when does life begin? Does it begin at conception? Can you have an abortion up to 40 days, which is what a lot of the scholars were saying. Others were saying you can have it up to 120 20 days. And I said, look, I'd like to give you a different metaphor for incarnation or ensoulment. Like, when does the soul enter the body? And it's when you put on like a VR headset, it's when you forget what you were doing before.
Wow.
And the Greeks talked about Lethe, the river of forgetfulness that you had to cross.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese talk about Meng Po, who's the goddess of forgetfulness. And what does she do? She brews the tea of forgetfulness. And you drink the tea before you. And in Islam, you have the 70,000 veils of light and dark.
Right.
And what are those veils doing? They're kind of imprisoning us. Insan, the Arabic word for person, means prisoner. Prisoner of what? And there's an Arabic term called nisyan, which means forgetfulness.
Right. You know, on the other end of that, my mother just died recently, and she didn't believe any of this, but yet I feel like, oh, now she's remembering on this other side that it was a game, that it was a drama. She had lessons to learn, and she's seeing the big picture. So there's a remembering as well as a forgetting.
Yes. When you die, you start to
but
remember.
But maybe
someone.
We don't have to die to remember.
Right.
That's the key.
That's the key.
Remember the soul's incarnation on many, many levels. And then we could see all the simulations we've been playing out.
Right. You feel this is a prize moment, consciousness awakening.
Yeah.
Not with new technology, but here your work, in some sense, validates what the mystery schools have talked about in ages past, that there are higher levels of consciousness interaction through which we can not only invent ourselves, but we see other inventive pathways that cosmic intelligence has provided. If we are wise and humble enough to recognize everything is not within the human psyche.
Yeah, and my work actually provides a bridge to modernity to modern science and technology. The part of the reason why I wrote the simulation hypothesis, and I originally wrote it back in 2019, and I just did a second edition, because AI has come so far. But part of the reason I wrote it was because I can't go into MIT physicists and start talking about apparitions and near-death experiences and life reviews. But I can go in there and start talking about, is the world built of information?
Right.
I met a Nobel Prize winning physicist at the University of Cambridge. Actually, you guys might know him, Brian Josephson.
Yeah, I know Brian.
I met him briefly there and was describing this idea of information. He said, well, yeah, that's not controversial anymore that the world consists of information. But they're willing to talk about that. And then the logical implications of that are that if it's information, you can modify the information, you can change the information. Anyone that's sitting outside of the game would start to look like a supernatural entity or like an NPC.
Right.
Well, that's when I talked to Brian a few years ago in Germany, I asked him what he was working on, and he said he was working on what existed before creation.
But that what you just said also goes back to the idea of flatland. So if there are entities living in a two-dimensional space and we are three-dimensional, we're seeing more of reality. So if they're fourth-dimensional, they're seeing our three-dimensional world, or what you say, or eighth dimension in the remote viewing book that you wrote, the Mind Dynamics. So so dimensional realities mean where the game is being played at a more complicated overview or the oversoul.
Well, Lisa, can manage and can watch and can shift. I think ideas can come into this reality.
Yeah.
And they don't have to be in a physical form. They can simply throw in information like, you know, here's a good way of making a car that doesn't run on gas. You know, they can bring that in. A lot of people have talked about that. Yeah, a lot of scientists get ideas in their sleep. Well, where are those, you know, ideas coming from? Musicians, you ask a musician where he got the music, he often says, well, I just heard it, right?
Like Paul McCartney yesterday.
Exactly.
He woke up and said, hey, have you guys heard this tune?
So we do have to realize, and I think on a very positive level, that there is information always on this planet for our own personal, I'll call it evolution, that always to help. Now, whether we choose that or not, because it's a world of duality, is up to us. And I do think that's another side to it. We won't get into it this late in the game, but free will. I do think, even though we're playing down here, I still think we do have certain types of choices. That's another thing.
As the avatar. Yeah.
I would agree. So what I like to say is, generally speaking, you're choosing the overall storyline, but you're not making every little choice beforehand. So when you're in the game, and as a video game designer, I know we kind of give you the illusion of free will, but and we give you certain choices, but you still have to make those choices.
Well, is that why you win the game if you don't make the right choice?
Yeah, or you may go back and try it again.
Do it again. Reincarnation.
Yeah. It's almost like there's a writer's room. Like if you think of like a season of a TV series, they might know the arc, but it's not until each episode they say, what are we going to throw at these people this episode? What are we going to, in order to get them to the eventual place?
I just mentioned reincarnation, but actually Dr. Jack and I don't use that term normally.
Right.
We actually say biogenesis, because the idea is that we have this higher reality of who we are, and we biogenesis to certain planetary systems, times, and whatever that we want to. That's who we
are. They're saying an avatar, basically,
yeah,
the biogenesis.
Yeah, yeah.
But I say, you know, the R.D. Lang quote, yesterday the world was a machine, today it's a hologram, who knows what metaphor we'll throw at tomorrow's world.
Yeah.
You know, so it's evolving spiritual processes for a new technological society, and somehow we're moving somewhere, we're going somewhere, we're not just going around all this gaming is leading somewhere, but we don't know what that is.
And the
right?
reason I don't like reincarnation is the idea that it's all stuck here, right? You're here and then you go away maybe for 7 years and you come back, but you didn't go anywhere.
But where
you're
is
holding.
It going, Riz?
No, it's going into who we are.
But is it possible that if we are choosing a past, we are also choosing our past lives, and we're tuning into a past life now based upon what our challenges are.
Well, how
are
about
now?
The future? Now, what's the future? What futures can we choose?
Well, that's great. So there's a version of quantum mechanics or an interpretation that is called the transactional interpretation. And in that interpretation, they say there are these possible futures that are sending us information. And which one we tune into or observe.
Like the cat.
Isn't
that Schrodinger's cat?
It's like Schrodinger's cat, but it's in the future. Like, what happens to the cat after the box? Does it go out to the yard? Does it go in the kitchen? Does it jump on the roof? Those are three possible futures.
And I do have to say, when you talk of quantum mechanics, there's infinite future possibilities.
Well, that's what I'm saying about what you're just saying. Because the future is the unknown. So if we plan it out, it's known and it's sort of already been complete. But if we are open to the spirit, the reality, we're always getting something we had yet to imagine. This is the evolution of consciousness.
The keys of Enoch is called the infinite way.
Yes, and we don't know what it is at this moment, because that's the adventure of living, is that the universe gives us more than we can imagine now. Every moment is an ongoing spectacular revelation, let's call it. That's my philosophy. So how does that fit in with this whole thing that's all simulated and we all know everything?
Well, but I'm not saying we necessarily all know everything, because we're all playing the game together.
Right.
And the reason we have it's a
and it's fun.
Multiplayer game.
Fun.
It's fun, quote unquote, right? I mean, Swami Yogananda said, the nature of this world is not ceaseless joy.
It's not?
Right.
Oh,
what?
In the Quran, they said, it's an enjoyable delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which enjoyable I put in quotes, because it's not always enjoyable. But you know, if you play a game, if it's too simple to play, you're going to stop playing, and if it's too difficult, you're going to stop playing. So you have to make it easy to play but difficult to master.
Right.
Which,
but make it fun too,
and make it fun. That's important.
But
the fun part is
fun.
Learning and evolving.
But let's get back to reality. Unfortunately, for many, this is not a great game.
It's not?
It's not a great simulation. So how can we, if I can just say this as we wrap it up,
how
can we shift this into something that's positive for almost everyone? So we have to have a higher view of who we are and what's going on. I think that's what simulated universe and hypothesis is telling us. If we don't take this life like it has to, everything has to be mine.
Right.
You know, yes. Or, you know, I don't like you, we're separate.
And
if we don't
drama
see that,
and the and believing in your emotion or your identity, you know, people identify with their baseball team, their political party. If you insult any of that, you're insulting them. But that's not them. That's just the avatar. It's not even the avatar. It's the mask of the avatar.
I call it NPC mode.
Yes.
Which is where you're just repeating what you have learned in this physical life, but you're forgetting about the soul. You're disconnected. The forgetfulness is...
So isn't the idea to bring the soul into the avatar so it can know, like, its next step to bring the most joy or benefit to others, compassion and love?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about a game, how it's measured is done at the end of the game. And if you talk to people who've had near-death experiences, and they have a life review, well, how is it measured? It's measured a couple of ways. First, the being of light usually asks, okay, what have you done? But do you remember what you said you were going to do? Which of those things did you do? And then the second most important thing is, how did you treat other people? Because you have to relive it.
Daniel Brinkley really emphasizes that. It's,
it's
your life review is not from your perspective. It was from
other people's
perspectives.
And so I met Daniel and I have, and so I said, for me, the question is, how would that work? Well, you could do that. You could replay from the other person's perspective. Like Daniel literally shot people and killed them. So he had to see what it was like for the bullet to come and kill him. Now, it turns out we can do that in a video game. Because we're recording everything. We can take you to any XYZ location.
Everything is recorded. I agree with that, and I think you see that. Let me just say one other. You're talking about life review. I remember this one I listened to, and she said that she finally died, but of course came back as it was a near death. And they told her, look, we gave you this. You were supposed to be able to do this when this happened to you. You didn't do it. Then we gave you this. You didn't do it. Finally, you died. Now we're showing you the book of life. Get it right, go back, do it, you know, fix
it. Yes, right, right.
And even in the early Christian, they speak in the Greek, Bibliotesis, the book of life, deals with the biological understanding of why we were here in this incarnation.
You know, fix
right. And I would say the book of life is a metaphor in that. And it doesn't mean it's a physical book that with angels and feather pens. And in Islam, we have the scroll of deeds, where two angels write down your good deeds and your bad deeds. And again, those are technological metaphors to try to explain something. You can take these metaphors from different religions and ask yourself, if they were describing something real, then what would they be describing? Well, today we could use a technological metaphor to try to explain, like this idea of the book of life. Like most angels are, the way they describe them are actually more like functions or processes than actual entities.
Well, one can see like Archangel Michael is a protector, so that's an energy.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be one being, and we even think in a simulated area that there's that consciousness. And we talk more about consciousness than we'll say gameplay, but that can it can go into many realities. So it can come here, or it can go there. It can it's like Kuan Yin with her many arms. She can be all over the place, and she never leaves what she's doing. She is who she is.
Well, it sounds more like a process that's running
well,
all throughout reality.
But let me just say, in terms of religion as well, it doesn't mean that any one of them is inaccurate. It just simply means that we're starting to understand more of what was being said, that there is an afterlife, that there is a power, that there these things we can do. We talk about even the you know divine spirit that can empower us to do more. Here.
Well, one thing I just want to bring in here is that my favorite movie, Groundhog's Day, where, you know, the guy, he's playing at this level until he does something internally that shifts him out of that Groundhog Day. And he doesn't know it. It was the spirit that came forward where he was at service for everyone and himself. And then he went to the next player level.
Right. And he replayed the game again and again until he figured it out.
He figured it out. So
and then he had to play it a perfect way.
Right. When you're here for the service of everyone and yourself and you do everything you love and you're helping out. So is that your final solution? Is that
how we treat other people is the point of the game.
Yeah.
And once we learn that, then we can play the game perfectly and perhaps we don't have to play again.
So what's the bottom line?
What is the bottom line?
To realize that life is not a game but a gift of how we use the creative dynamics in all possibilities. and not surrender them simply to see life within a cage or a construct that takes away the joy, the purpose, the compassion. Mm-hmm. And all of your great thinkers, I think, would agree with Riz's book. We are rediscovering ourselves mm-hmm. in the technical sense, but also in something that surpasses the technical.
Mm-hmm. So what would be your takeaway for the people watching?
I would say to enjoy all of the experiences of the video game of life. That includes the negative ones, mm-hmm. right? Why do you watch a horror movie? Why do actors play a role and win an Oscar for the one? They usually win it for the roles that have a lot of suffering.
And I would say it's not just for our own evolution, but it is to help one another. And it's also, I personally believe, that we're in a space, reality, 3D, whatever you want to call it, 3D, 4D, and we're actually working to change this entire reality to bring in more positive energy and more life.
So
that's our work.
And my conclusion is that, read the book. Now, my conclusion is we are in this beautiful simulation, and when we realize it, we can actually enjoy it more because you could smell the flowers. You can help other people. That really gives gratification when you're there at service for someone else and for yourself, where you can be, you know, learning more. I'm here to learn. I have all these books in my apartment. It's like I love just finding out new information because we made up information. And to help others and to enjoy every moment of reality, the air, the ocean, the sea, the land, the sky. Everything is here. For in a sense, for our empowerment. We're here, these avatars here. Right,
so all of you, enjoy the game and the gift of life. Choose a higher path.
Thank you, Drs. Hertog and Riz. Always good to see you. Always good. And stay tuned for our next show with Rizwan Burke and the Hertogs, of course. Thank you.